This is 77 Debriefings. I'm Intelligence Officer Wiz.
And I'm Weapons Specialist Zero.
Zero. How you doing this week?
A little bit tired because the situation with my daylight gig is either things are hot or things are cold. And lately, it's just been in the cold phase. So unfortunately, yeah. I've been falling asleep at my desk.
Yeah, I understand. It's hard to be a gigolo nowadays. So I understand that. All right, Zero, so we're here to comb the files of MI6 to discuss the cinematic adventures of one James Bond. This week, The Living Daylights. Let's get into our mission objective, The Living Daylights. We're going to discuss certain elements of the film and go into detail about them. Zero, why don't we start with 007, which is James Bond, played by Timothy Dalton.
Timothy Dalton's portrayal of Bond is a bit interesting. He's a bit kind of cold and aloofish. His delivery of the Bond punchline is a bit on the dry side. In my mind, it definitely didn't seem like a bad thing. It just seemed a little bit different, especially when you had the previous Bond just being a bit on the charming side and just kind of having a little bit of fun with delivering the punchlines and everything. The action scenes seemed okay. Definitely seemed like there might be a little bit of issues with the choreography, but at the same time, some of the action scenes are just chock full of practical effects, which is great to see because just I always hate the projection effects and stuff like that, and thankfully the projection effects and stuff in this one combined with Timothy Dalton having to navigate through some of those action scenes, it seems very minimum. I think, kind of like you said before we started this podcast, This is getting a little bit closer to the Bond movies that we're kind of used to in the modern day Contemporary sense.
I think the best way of saying this is I think it's Dalton is just like less is more when it comes to Dalton. Yeah. I'm sorry. That was terrible. Basically, the best way I can describe Dalton is this is professional. He doesn't do a lot of cheeky wordplay, immature jokes, or constant flirtation. He has a little bit of flirtation. Dalton's Bond is really about the mission and performing it efficiently, is how I look at Timothy Dalton as Bond in this. He's got kind of like a steely look to him. He's very hardened, and it just seems like someone that's not to be messed with, but he just doesn't have the arrogance of Connery, which I think is both good and bad in some ways, because on the one hand, he's much more intimidating, but on the other, the fun of Connery's Bond is not there. But I do like Dalton in this as Bond. I think he's very believable, but he just lacks the charisma of the other three Bonds. I don't think his lack of charisma is a big deal. It's really something that in this film is not entirely necessary for him to succeed in the mission. I guess the best way is it really just shows him as an efficient agent and an efficient killer, which in the last few Moore film is not what you saw in this. It really feels like they said, okay, we did Moore, let's just do the opposite, and this is the result of that.
That's actually kind of a fair thought. It almost seems kind of like an overcorrection. With Moore, we maybe went a little bit too silly, too slapstickish, too much Saturday morning cartoon. Let's kind of rein it back in and just kind of go for the spy that wants to just get the job done and get it done correctly and with minimum fuss and minimum fanfare. And that's kind of what Timothy Dalton's character portrayal of Bond just seems like. Just, hey, I'm here to do the job and do it right and just get it done as efficiently as possible because there's some large stakes at hand. And much like you had mentioned, while the charisma of Bond in his portrayal isn't there, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's also not necessarily great either.
So let's get to villains. There are two villains in this film, but it's kind of the same dynamic as from Russia with Love, where the main villain is actually a background villain. So let's start with the main villain, Zero. Let's start with Brad Whitaker, played by Joe Don Baker.
This one was kind of funny. When he was finally on the screen, I was just like, what the fuck is Jack Wade doing here? If you didn't, and for anyone who doesn't realize what I mean by that, Joe Don Baker also plays Jack Wade in GoldenEye. So for me, that was kind of the moment that I had when I first saw him on screen. I was like, what the fuck is he doing here? And then I was like, oh, never mind, different character. Whitaker is kind of interesting in the fact that he's sort of like this weird mercenary arms dealer who thinks of himself as like master general because he apparently studies the history of warfare and he has like several tables with like reenactments of historical wars in his little like war room that he's got in the movie that's shown a few times. I think there were tables that depicted things like Gettysburg, Waterloo, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And he's a bit interesting because he just kind of goes off on, I just think warfare is the cog in the machine that gets humanity further along, you know, just warfare is a necessary evil. I'm just the facilitator. It's a bit interesting, but also he kind of plays off the bravado of, I've got the most advanced weapons. Anyone would want what I'm selling. So, you know, just all I do is just serve the interests that are willing to pay up the money to get the advanced technologies that I have access to.
Yeah, he's an interesting villain. He's also pretty damn annoying. He's also barely in the film as well. As a main villain, as the one that really is the one spearheading the entire process, he's pretty annoying. But again, he's barely in the film as well. All right, so the next villain, which I think is the one that we see more of, is General Georgi Koskov, played by Joran Krabbe.
Georgi Koskov is kind of interesting because in the beginning, the viewer is also fooled into thinking, oh my god, he's trying to escape the Soviets. He must be protected at all costs. And then as you go through the movie, just the facade sort of like weathers away and you're just like, oh shit. He's been trying to be sort of a mastermind of like an elaborate scheme to deceive the Soviets all in the same for his own personal gain. Holy shit. It's kind of an interesting dynamic and everything too, because of course, just he starts off just with being deathly afraid of just his handlers and all this other stuff. And just how it sort of weaves in the betrayal of his motives is just a very, very interesting thing to see in a Bond movie and everything. He's a bit interesting, but it's kind of weird just how his portrayal is, because he starts off super, super gracious and stuff like that, but then once sort of the plot unravels, he becomes sort of like the asshole playboy type.
Yeah, he goes through two extremes. He's very supportive of Bond, and then he just becomes sneering villain towards the end of the film. He's interesting because of just how brilliant he is, because he plays off numerous sides throughout the film. He plays off the Soviets, the British, Whitaker, and the Mujahideen. He does it quite well. He's a weird villain for one main reason, because he's another background villain. He's not in the film as much. He's in it more than Whitaker is, but he's not in it as much either. He shows up in scenes where he's in the background or where he is doing something that Bond is looking after. But when he gets his comeuppance at the end, it's not all that satisfying. When you look at everything outside of the actual look of the villain and how he acts, it's actually a really good villain. When he's on screen, it's a lot less compelling. Bond Girl, which is Cara Malvoy, played by Mariam Diabo.
I think she was kind of cute. Not like the typical Bond girl dynamic of the Bond girl is just absolutely drop dead insanely hot, sort of like a characterization that usually most Bond girls get, but she's kind of on the cute side. It's interesting because in the movie, in the beginning, it starts off with her being characterized as like some sort of career assassin and everything, and then it turns out, actually no, just she was sort of a pawn being manipulated by her boyfriend Koskov, because Bond had noticed, you know, they were just inconsistencies about the whole story. It's just like, her an assassin? I don't buy it. She looks inexperienced as hell.
I think the fact that she's inexperienced and she's, I guess naive is the best way to put it, is what makes her a little more interesting than the most Bond girls, especially the last Bond girl. Oh my god. She is such a great improvement from the last Bond girl. But she's not as capable. She is definitely a damsel in distress type of character. But she's interesting in a lot of ways too, because at first you think she's a secondary villain, but then you realize that she's being played, and that's how you learn that Bond's being played, because she got played. It really shows the machinations of the plot and how important she is to it. I think she's cute too. I think she's all the Bond girls are attractive. Let's get past that, okay? Like, as a performance, I think she does quite well. She's not annoying. She's useful and believable in the role and can be, I think, pretty charming. What I also like about this character is that she doesn't fall for Bond right away. She's very hesitant. But when it starts to get to the end where they do eventually, you know, hook up, it's believable. It doesn't feel that way. I think that her falling for Bond is actually more believable than I would say most.
I actually quite like the dynamic of just, she just is hesitant to believe Bond, even though Bond kind of comes off as, hey, I'm a friend of Yorgi's, you know, it's fine, you can trust me. And she just is like, all right, well, sure, I guess you're a friend of his, you know, but I'm really, really desperate to see him, so, you know, just, I guess I'll follow your lead. And of course, just as things go on, and then once Yorgi's mask had been pulled completely straight off, she ends up just really, really being just reviled that just, she finally has to come to terms with the fact that Yorgi has played her right from the beginning. That's just when everything changes, and it just felt like such a clever masterstroke of just the character dynamic change, because, like, for most of the movie, she's just been holding on to hope that, oh, I hope Yorgi's okay. I hope everything is fine. Please, 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 I hope Yorgi's not dead or in a KGB torture room or whatever, and then just to find out, nope, he's completely fine. He's been the mastermind behind this whole thing. I think what really sealed the deal is just, you see the genuine anger and frustration that she realizes that, yeah, she's just been played.
Yeah.
And I think that's what made her characterization feel so good.
Before we get to spy action, I think the one thing that I really want to get across here is that the least interesting character in this film is Bond, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
You know, when you put it that way, that's a really interesting thought. Lore-wise, it's actually kind of interesting that you mention that, because ultimately, the objective of a spy is, well, to leave no trace behind and just to get the job done without leaving much of a trace. So for Bond to be kind of an uninteresting character, it's kind of an interesting thought. It's one that I'm a bit conflicted in, because if Bond is the main character, he's supposed to be interesting, but at the same time, he's not as interesting as some of the past Bonds.
Spy action!
I think this one felt like a lot of fun, especially with some of the chase scenes. I thought some of the chase scenes were just absolutely brilliant, lots of fun, especially like in the beginning with the Gibraltar scene. Starts off with a spy exercise gone wrong, and then just bam, just Bond is just, I tried to take care of this assassin, and it just gets into like a wild chase on the road. And then of course you've got the whole ice lake sequence, which was just a lot of fun there too. That one also had a bit of a slapstick sort of moment too, when they're using Karis cello case to kind of go tobogganing down the hill.
Yeah. It was a little ridiculous, but I didn't mind it so much, because Bond himself isn't that comedic, but when everything else is surrounding in comedy, I think it had a nice straight man feel to it, so I was okay with it. I agree with you with the beginning action scene, the Gibraltar scene, the 00 agents training course. I thought that was a really good scene, and the end of it was really good as well. The final action scene was also really good. The plane full of opium, like, that is a really well done scene. Both exciting. The stunts are really great in this as well, and the whole build up to the plane chase is also really well done. I have to admit, like, those action scenes are really good. From everything from the espionage to the gunfights, they're pretty fun to watch and pretty exciting as well. We mentioned this beforehand, you mentioned it in the review. This is probably where you're going to start seeing constant improvement on how the action scenes and chase scenes look. And I think it starts with here, because this looks really good.
Gadget-wise, this is a bit on the minimum side, and I think it's for the better, because, like, I think really the two big gadgets that you see are the Aston Martin V8 Volante, which is just typical Bond car shenanigans. You got switches for almost every sort of scenario he gets into a jam for, and everything. So, I mean, there's that, and then of course there's the goofy little locating keychain that ends up being like knockout gas and everything.
Okay, so let's get into theme song and opening credits. The theme song is The Living Daylights, written by Pal Waktar, composed by John Barry, and performed by A-ha.
This one felt fun. Granted, it wasn't Duran Duran like the last movie, but
nothing ever will be.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. And the opening sequence was also just kind of fun. It still had sort of the 80s design vibes to it, so it wasn't too bad.
I think the song's okay. It has some good energy to it, and it feels more appropriate for the film. The opening credits sequence is also good, but it kind of copies elements from The Spy Who Loved Me and Octopussy. They feel throwbacky more than anything. They're okay. I have no problem with it. Okay, Zero, so we're getting to our conclusions, so go right ahead. What are your final thoughts on The Living Daylights?
I think it's a great first debut for Timothy Dalton. It's definitely, in a sense, I feel like it's sort of an overcorrection for sort of the silly, slapstickish comedy sort of stylings of the Roger Moore movies, but that's not in a bad way, especially if the last few movies were an indication from us that we appreciate the comedy, but we don't like it when it sort of dilutes sort of the seriousness of the action and everything. You got a cute-ish Bond girl this time. That's not necessarily a bad thing.
Cute-ish? Come on, dude, really? Cute-ish? Damn, you are harsh, man.
Hey, I mean, it's not to say that I don't like her or anything.
I'm not gonna shame you. Like, it's fine. Like, I guess she's a 6 or 7, I guess. Whatever.
No, definitely not that. I mean, and I quite like her, but compared to like the rest of the Bond girl retinue, just she's more on the cute side of things.
Sure.
And then, of course, you've got the two villains who are interesting, but unfortunately, they're just shuffled off in the background, and just most of the times it's the henchmen doing things, which is a little bit unfortunate because the villains are really, really interesting. Overall, I would say this is a mission accomplished, even if it is a bit of an overcorrection from more movies that had a bit of comedy and things like that. I would say mission accomplished mostly because just it just feels like a good movie. I think just as a first outing for Timothy Dalton, it's fantastic.
I agree with you. It's a mission accomplished for me as well. I agree with a lot of your point. It definitely felt like an overcorrection for the Moore movies. There is comedy in it, but the only thing that is not comedic in the slightest is Bond, which is, I think, a big overcorrection from the Moore films. I think it's a better Bond, though, because he feels threatening and exciting again. And that was the big problem I had with Moore. Whenever you'd act mean, whenever you'd act cold. And we had a comment on one of our episodes as well, where someone mentioned that Moore did act pretty cold in one specific scene in one of the Bond films. I just didn't buy it. But the elements surrounding Bond make it fun and engaging in this movie. I agree with you with the villains. They're disappointing. But the action, the Bond girl, and I think Dalton himself makes up for that small misstep. And what I like the most about this movie is the most important thing is the story, is what's going on. Because in previous Bond films, especially with Moore, the most important things were the Bond girl or Bond. The whole mystery and the action stuff was kind of secondary. In this one, you have a sprawling plot that twists and turns in different ways. And it's easily the most captivating and compelling thing about the movie. Overall, I'm going to say mission accomplished as well. It is disappointing that Dalton won't have more films after the next one. It's a good Bond film, and I find it pretty exciting and fun. So overall, mission accomplished for me. Mission accomplished for you?
Yeah.
And mission accomplished for The Living Daylights. Now, if you want my full review on this movie, you can go to my website at imthewiz.com. You'll have my full written review right on the site, along with a link to the video that has this review that you've just listened to. All right, Zero, so we are at the end of this episode. So next week, what is going to be the next film we're going to be watching?
It is 1989's License to Kill.
License to Kill. All right. We're heading to that point now where I think it's after this one, we get into Brosnan, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, that'll be interesting. I don't know much about this, to be absolutely honest with you, except that Benicio Del Toro's in this. Oh my God, how long has he been acting? No, seriously, how long has he been acting for?
God, I can't even remember.
I remember seeing him in a film in the 90s. I think it was called Baggage something. It was with Alicia Silverstone. It was awful, so don't watch it. But, like, I remember him in it, and I thought that was his starring role, but I guess not. All right, so tune in next time where we're going to be reviewing the file for License to Kill. I'm Intelligence Officer Wiz.
And I'm Weapons Specialist Zero.
Talk to you guys next time. Bye.